Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today is the appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our great, great acharyas in our line. So we will focus on him, some of his teachings, some of his contributions to Krishna consciousness, because he was truly a very great personality. In fact, he is really the pioneer of this Krishna consciousness movement as we know it. It means a preaching movement of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. Up until the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the devotees, they were devotees. I mean, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, devotees in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they were more or less entirely, they were very reclusive and not coming out to give Krishna consciousness practically at all. Particularly in the 100 years or so, perhaps, maybe 200 years, before Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself. They were really just strict renunciates. At least the best of them were strict renunciates, and they would stay in different holy places and chant. This is really what their program was. But actually the mission of Lord Chaitanya was Pritiviti Achiyata Nagaradigram Sarvatra Prachara Haibe Moranam. Lord Chaitanya speaks this verse in Chaitanya Bhagavat. He says, in every town and village on this planet, my holy names will be chanted. So the devotees, up till the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from maybe like 100 years after Lord Chaitanya, so from that time, the devotees could not really understand this statement of Lord Chaitanya's that Krishna consciousness, the chanting of his holy names would be spread all over the world. They would sometimes try to interpret the word world around the world to mean around India. And it was really quite inconceivable to them that people from other cultural backgrounds could possibly take up Krishna consciousness and really get into Krishna consciousness. But still, it was the mission of Lord Chaitanya to just inundate the whole world with Krishna consciousness. This is what he appeared for, to give everybody, even ultimately, what to speak of this planet, but practically everybody in the universe, the opportunity to become Krishna conscious, and not just Krishna conscious, but to achieve the highest levels of Krishna consciousness, means to actually enter into an eternal personal relationship with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, in the service of Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani in Vrindavan. This was the mission of Lord Chaitanya. But from that time, some years after he left this world, until the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was not happening. And it looked like it would not happen. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, anyway, let us see. He appeared in this world on this day. Today is his appearance day. He appeared in this world on this day in 1838. So what is that? 174 years ago. That's some time ago. He appeared in this world. And of course, he is an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not just another devotee, but he's an associate of the Supreme Lord descending into this world on behalf of the Lord to spread the mission and message of the Lord. That is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But at least the family that he appeared in initially, they were not really devotees so much. They were more like, what would you say, general Hindu people, something like that. And certainly they were not pure Vaishnavas like Srila Prabhupada. Our Srila Prabhupada, he appeared in this world in a family of pure Vaishnavas. Srila Prabhupada's father was a very wonderful devotee. But in the case of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it was not, externally at least, it was not like that. So he was brought up under somewhat difficult circumstances. The family went through many difficulties. They had great financial difficulties. But anyway, they carried on Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the age of 12, was married. His wife was 5. This was the practice, or something like this at least. Was the practice in those days? And of course, you know, obviously they'd wait until their early adulthood before they would actually live as husband and wife, but still, this is what happened. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as he grew up a little, like into his 20s, young man, he came across some of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and he developed an attraction for Lord Chaitanya and a great appreciation for Lord Chaitanya. And it became clear in his mind that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, they were really on a much higher level than any of the other teachings that were available. In those days in India, the mid-1800s, 1850, 1860, like that. The British were in control, and very much in control, and they were very influential. And there were prominent amongst in the sort of religious, spiritual circles of the day, were groups of people from Hindu backgrounds and Vedic-type backgrounds, you could say, but influenced by Christianity, and in other words, quite a bit of a mixture, a little mixed up. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur could see, when he came across the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he could see, this is really something on another level altogether. Actually, the mission of Lord Chaitanya, well, we mentioned how the best of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the best of the followers of Lord Chaitanya, they were like recluses, and they would just sit and chant in some holy place of pilgrimage. But actually, that was the best of them. Unfortunately, there were not so many of them, and there was a substantial number of people who passed as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but really they were in the category what is called Sahajya. And there are different types of Sahajyas. It means really misled followers of Lord Chaitanya, misdirected, and with all different sorts of perverted forms of worship of Lord Krishna, supposedly under Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, he was, in his later pastimes particularly, he was always overwhelmed in very dramatic love for Krishna, and extremely highly transcendentally emotional. So many of the followers of Lord Chaitanya, they would present themselves like that, but artificially. Very emotional, rolling on the ground, crying, tears, but not really tears of ecstasy. And then the people called the Jati Gosai, it's another form of Upper Sampradaya, is really the general term. Upper Sampradaya. Sampradaya means the line coming from the Lord. Upper Sampradaya means a perverted or misdirected line, claiming to be coming from the Lord, but really just so many concoctions and so much nonsense. So there are different of these Upper Sampradayas, the Jati Gosai, the Caste Goswamis, people who are supposedly Goswamis by birth, Goswami, Swami. These are the titles of the renounced order of life. But these people, householders, who are like pujaris, really, they had somehow or other commandeered those titles. I remember when I was in, when we were in Cato Ridge many years ago, I had just arrived in the country and I saw the mail arrived, and there was one letter to one devotee, householder, living in the temple. Such and such Swami and Mrs. Swami. We find it amusing and it is. But But these people are very serious in their minds. Even I've met Mr. in India, I met Mr. and Mrs. Brahmachari. Seriously. It's really mixed up. You know, they're taking these titles because they're very respected titles. So they're assuming ownership of those titles. But really, a lot of it is to do with becoming popular and reaping the fruits of popularity in the form of followers, income, and so on like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, oh, and then the actual classic Prakrita Sahajiyas, they would imitate the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. I will be Krishna, you will be Radha, and we will have rasa dance and various conjugal pastimes. So the way Prabhupada describes it is that when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a young man and just beginning to take an interest in Krishna consciousness, in Lord Chaitanya, then Krishna consciousness, or Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness following Lord Chaitanya, was really in a great state of disrepair. And actual respectable pious people did not take it seriously and did not take those devotees seriously, and in most cases for good reason. And Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness, following Lord Chaitanya, had become a beggar's excuse for making a living. That I'm a follower of Lord Chaitanya, and people say, oh, okay, and give a donation. A beggar's excuse for making a living. And respectable people didn't take it seriously because there was quite a bit of outright perversity going on in the name of Lord Chaitanya. It was really sad. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and because of how things have deteriorated so drastically, Gaudiya Vaishnava literature was not available. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as we said, when he was perhaps in his early 20s, he really started to take an interest in Lord Chaitanya and Krishna consciousness as taught by Lord Chaitanya, and he tried to find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengal, in Bengali. Surely one would expect it would be very easy to find. But it took him about 10 years to find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita in Bengali, in Bengal. In 1868, when he was 30, he somehow or other acquired a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that influenced him very, very greatly. So he really became completely convinced that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is the Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga. And Lord Chaitanya is, his teachings are the supermost, topmost of all Vaishnava teachings or Vedic teachings, or just religious spiritual teachings in the world. In his early adulthood, he was a teacher. He was a teacher for some years. He learned English, he was fluent in English, which in those days in India, for the local Indian people was quite rare. That he was fluent in English, and as a result was easily able to work with the British people. So around that time, 1868, when he was 30, around that time, he was approached by an acquaintance who also had dealings with the British, that, you know, you could get into law. There is a need. The British need local Indian people who can act as lawyers and judges and magistrates like that, take up court work. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur accepted that practically without much training. And in 1871, he was posted to Jagannath Puri as the deputy magistrate. Not full magistrate, because in those days, in that sort of hierarchy and that part of the legal field, the highest post an Indian person could have was deputy magistrate. The magistrates, the top magistrates, they were all British. So he moved to Jagannath Puri in 1871 as deputy magistrate, which was very powerful position. Prabhupada explains it was just a little under being the governor of the province. It was really very high position, and not just in terms of dealing with cases in the law courts, but for example, the deputy magistrate, he was in charge or overseeing the Jagannath temple. All the goings on, the management, the finances, and the program of worship, etc. All the goings on in the Jagannath temple. Then, and the deputy magistrate was also sort of something like minister of finance in the state. So he was also involved in overseeing the state finances. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he went to Jagannath Puri and he became involved in all these things, in regard particularly to the temple itself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he went there, the program of offerings and worship on the altar was a little disorganized. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he reorganized the whole program of deity worship in the Jagannath temple. How many offerings they cook, when the offerings are made, the arities, and all the different timings, and all the different procedures for bathing the deities and like that. And Prabhupada said that the programs instituted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur when he was the deputy magistrate, even way back then, 1870s, that program, Prabhupada said, is still followed today. Yes. So he really had a very major impact on the temple. Then one interesting thing, going through all the finances, Bhaktivinoda Thakur found that the king of Puri, of course, well, it was kind of half and half. The British were ruling, and they had their own administration. But then the local Maharajas and the kings, they still maintained some control, sort of half and half. But they still maintained some control. Bhaktivinoda Thakur found out, going through all the financial records, that the king had borrowed, quote-unquote, as they say sometimes, borrowed on a no-return basis. He had borrowed 80,000 rupees from the temple to finance basically his sort of extravagant social life of entertaining people and having parties and whatnot. So he borrowed 80,000 rupees. Nowadays, well, that's what, 15,000 rands perhaps or something. Yeah, it's not a small amount of money, but in those days, we're talking about 140 years ago, 80,000 rupees, that was a fortune, a real fortune. And the king, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, went to see the king, and it became clear that he had no intention of paying the money back. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur decided to take him to court, because he is the court. And, you know, the king was not the absolute authority. His position, he had some authority, but really the British were the actual authorities, ultimately. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur took him to court, and a ruling was made that the king had to return the 80,000 rupees. Needless to say, the king did not appreciate that. So what he did, he decided to kill or have Bhaktivinoda Thakur killed. Not by some sort of assassination exactly, but by some tantric, ritualistic process. So what he did, he got some tantric, like, you know, what we would call in Chatsworth, backdoor preaching. Some of those people. Sort of backdoor come mooty man. So he got some of them. And they held in the basement of the palace, they carried out 24 hours a day for 1 month some big tantric fire sacrifice, at the end of which, when they put the final ablations into the fire, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was meant to drop dead. So this went on 24 hours a day for a month. And finally, when it came time to put the final ablations in the fire, then the royal family gathered around the fire, the king and his wife and their children, and the final ablations were poured in. And right at that moment, the oldest son of the king collapsed into the fire and died. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur got the king to pay the money back. So he was extremely influential, extremely powerful. And by that time, we're now into the 1870s, well into the 1870s. He was, by this time, staunch devotee, staunch, staunch. staunch devotee and just really amazing personality. His program, his daily program, was roughly as follows. He would get up at 10 o'clock at night. He would get up 10 o'clock at night, have a bath, and light his oil lamp and write. At 4 in the morning, he'd take rest and get up at 4:30. Then he would take bath again and chant japa till 7. At 7, he would write letters, do some correspondence, not email, not Facebook, or Mixit, but he would write letters. Then 7:30 to 8:30, he would read Shastra. 8:30, he would receive guests or continue reading until 9:30 in the morning. 9:30, he would take rest till 9:45. At 9:45, he would take bath again and take breakfast. His breakfast was roughly as follows. 1/2 liter of milk, 2 chapatis, and some fruit. Then at 9:55, he would go to court in a carriage. They say that he would always go to the court wearing coat and pants with double-sized, big tulsi neck beads and big tilak. And there are actually photographs of him with big moustache. Big moustache. He was very strong in his decisions. He would decide cases immediately on the spot. And Prabhupada said he did not allow any humbug in the court. No upstart could stand before him. He would shave his head every month and never had any debts. No credit cards. So at 10 o'clock, he'd go to the court at 5 to 10. 10 o'clock, the court would begin. At 1, the court would finish. He'd go home, bathe, and refresh. 2 o'clock, he would return to his office until 5. At 5, he would come home and translate from Sanskrit into Bengali, usually. Or sometimes from Sanskrit or Bengali into English. Then he would have his evening bath and a meal, well, at least this is what it says, a meal of rice, 2 chapatis, and another 1/2 liter of milk. Then around 8, he would take rest till 10. So this was roughly the schedule of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. In Nectar of Devotion, chapter 18, there's the description of the characteristics of a devotee on the level of bhava, means very advanced, on the level of love of God, basically. Pure devotional service. And the first symptom is he doesn't waste any time. Prabhupada would not waste time. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur would not waste time. Only sleeping maybe 3 hours a night. Or 3 hours out of 24. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as the magistrate, he was extremely successful, and the British appreciated him greatly. And when there were big cases, they would give them to him to deal with. Big people, difficult cases, complicated cases, dangerous cases. Famous case that Bhaktivinoda Thakur dealt with, which I'm sure so many of you have heard of, was the case of Bhishikesen. Bhishikesen was a mystic, and he would do mystical feats and things. You know, we hear about people doing things like that. So he would do things like that and promote himself as God, and so many innocent and not well educated spiritually people would think he was God. Normally the British would not really worry about people like that. But in this case it was a bit different. Bhishikesen was trying to start a revolution against the British, because he's God, and what does God do when he comes? Pavitra Anayas Adina Vida Shaya Chakrasputa. He smashes the demons. And the British, well, they were definitely demons. So he was starting a revolution against the British, so therefore the British took note. And they called on Bhaktivinoda Thakur, "You go and get this man, sort this man out." So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went and with a whole group of soldiers and arrested this Bhishikesen. Bhishikesen was extremely popular, as we see sometimes with people who do mystical things.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Bhishikesen, he had a massive following. Thousands and tens of thousands of people. He was extremely prominent. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had him arrested. But that caused practically riots. And these thousands and thousands of people came and gathered in Puri around the courthouse when the case was going on. This Bhishikesen, he really did have mystical powers. He had long, fuzzy hair. Yes. And he could do things like make sort of like electrical flashes and like little lightning bolts or whatever come out of his hair. He was quite a spectacular person. And he had mystical powers. He could make people sick. He could cure people who were sick. And things like this. So he threatened Bhaktivinoda Thakur that, you know, "You don't understand. I'm Vishnu. And if you oppose me, that's sinful activity. And you will get severe reactions. You and your family will become sick and die." So sure enough, because he did have mystical powers, Bhaktivinoda Thakur became sick. And his whole family became sick. Extremely sick. He had quite a number of children. He had at least The total number of children was, as I recall, 10. So the youngest daughter at that point, her name was Madhurya Kadambini. As this case was going on, they were all extremely sick, but Madhurya Kadambini was just on the edge of dying. It was some type of fever, very high temperature. So, and this, every day when Bhaktivinoda Thakur would come to the court, and the case would continue, Bhishikesheng would tell him, "No, just see, you got to let me go. You're meant to be a Vaishnav, can't you recognize your Lord?" But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he stuck to his position because he knew this man is just a rascal and actually a demon himself. So they found him guilty of treason, like trying to start a revolution against the British government. And he was sentenced to some years in jail. And it's described as they were leading Bhishikesheng out of the jail, one of the British officers who had been he'd been reading up about yogis and mystical powers and things like this, he grabbed a big pair of scissors, they're almost like choppers, jumped on the back of this man, sort of tackled him to the ground and cut his hair off. And the man immediately lost his mystical powers. And on the spot, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the fever just left completely. On that last day when the sentencing was to happen, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to be carried into the courthouse. He was not able to walk. But as soon as they cut the man's hair, then immediately the fever just went, and the whole family, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's family, became completely healthy just on the spot in the matter of a minute. Yes, so anyway, that Bhishikesheng, he was sentenced to some years in jail, but he committed suicide in jail. He hung himself in the jail. So, yes, so now Bhaktivinoda Thakur is there in Puri. On February the 6th, 1874, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born there in Jagannath Puri. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had been praying, "Please send us someone, my Lord. Please send us someone who can take your mission and spread it. A ray of Vishnu. Send a ray of Vishnu." So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was born, and his umbilical cord was wrapped around his chest like a Brahman thread. And there are different things which indicated that he was a very special personality. Initially, Bhaktivinoda Thakur named him Bimal Prasad, because in the Jagannath temple there are many smaller temples of different demigods. And one of them is the temple of Bimala Devi, who is actually, they worship as Durga, but she's Yogamaya. She's Subhadra Yogamaya, Bimala. And when the food is offered to Jagannath, and now the offering is finished, it's Jagannath Prasad, some of the Mahaprasad is offered to Bimala Devi. And that is then called Bimala Prasad. And that is the top Prasad in Jagannath Puri. That's the top Jagannath Mahaprasad. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he continued on. He went to Puri in 1871 and he stayed there till 1887. At some point in the 1880s, when he was on holiday, he went to Navadvip and he appreciated the amazing transcendental atmosphere there, and he knew how it was such a special place, the place of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. So from sometime in the 1880s, he tried to negotiate a transfer to Krishnanagar, which is in that Navadvip area. But it was very difficult. Finally, he threatened to resign in 1887, and on November the 15th, 1887, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was transferred to Krishnanagar. So of course, while he was there, in all his spare time, he would go and visit the pastime places of Lord Chaitanya. A lot of it was all covered over, and it was not really clear where the different places were. And even the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya as such, it was not really clear where that was. There was a place on the western side of the Ganges, which people were treating as the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. There was a neem tree there, and you know, there's a little house there, and it's still there. It is the other birthplace. And well, it's extremely popular, actually. It's extremely popular. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, studying Shastra so much, and he saw that, according to scripture, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, Mayapur, is on the eastern side of the Ganges. And he found, because the Ganges changes its course even since I went there first in 1976. It's changed its course a lot, tremendously. It's amazing. So he found different maps, old maps, showing the course of the Ganges and showing Mayapur on the eastern side. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was sure that the place which was recognized at that time as being the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, he was sure it was not the birthplace. And he would go and research and walk around, move around and speak to people on the eastern side of the Ganges on a regular basis. Finally, he found a place which he thought maybe or seemed that it must be the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. It was like a hillock, just a small raised area covered in tulsi. And there were some devotees there, like renunciates just chanting there. So he thought, this must be the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. In 1891, he had already been there in Krishnanagar, in the Navadvip area, since 1887. In 1891, He took Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was his Siksha Guru. He took him to that place, and of course there's very famous story. Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, at the time, nobody really knew how old he was, but they took him to be like 130 or so. He couldn't stand up, he couldn't walk. He had to be carried in a basket. And he couldn't even keep his eyes open because the skin had become just so sort of weak that it just fell over his eyes. He would have to, with his fingers, hold his eyes open. Yeah, I mean, really quite something. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took him in a basket to that place, Mayapur. And they arrived there, and Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj jumped out of the basket and started dancing and jumping 12 feet into the air, they say, and celebrating, this is the birthplace. So then, that was 1891. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, wanted to build a temple there to really establish this is the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So he had to raise the funds. He did big fundraising drive himself on his own. He went door to door around Calcutta asking people to give 1 rupee. Of course, 1 rupee in those days is worth a lot more than it is now, but still it's 1 rupee. And there were many pious people or nice people. They said, 1 rupee, we'll give you 10 rupees. He would refuse them and tell them, no, I just want 1 rupee. I don't want your pride. Just give me 1 rupee. This was reported in one of the newspapers that this Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kedarnath Dutt, he was known as at the time, he's going door to door and collecting 1 rupee. And the newspaper article said, we request everyone to give 1 rupee. So eventually, in 1895 or 1896, he opened the temple. Not the big temple which we see there now. Actually, even when I went there first in 1976, there was just the deity house was there. And the Kirtan Hall was not there. It was just open. So it was just the deity house was there. But he built not even that, but another small building or moderate sized building, and that was the temple. 1896, he wrote in English, Lord Chaitanya, His Life and Precepts, which is a small book, but just giving a, like an introduction to who is Lord Chaitanya and what is he about and like that. So he wrote that book in English and mailed it to a number of the universities in the Western world. He mailed it to universities in America, universities in Canada, in England, in Australia, numerous universities. And Prabhupada was in Canada one time, and he told the devotees about this. that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had sent a copy to, it's called McGill University, it's somewhere in Canada. And so one devotee, having heard that from Prabhupada, that university was in that city. The devotee went to the university, to the library, and sure enough, what did he find? There was the book, signed personally by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is like sort of 67, 68, 69, something like that. And the devotee, what the devotee did, he stole it. And other devotees went to other universities, and they found a few other copies, and they stole them too. So, same old people. They were, you know, new devotees. Not, the etiquette is not so good. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur started a Namahata program. Yeah. Well, actually, he retired in, I think, 1896. Around that time, he retired. He would have been a plus or minus 60 years old. So he retired and started a Namahata movement. His house, well, he moved, he was living not far from Krishnanagar, just by the Jalangi. It's called Surabhi Kunj. Swananda Sukhada Kunj is the name of the house, but the little area is called Surabhi Kunj. This is where Lord Nityananda began, or where he established his headquarters, Lord Nityananda, for his Namahata movement. Because Lord Nityananda, he spread Namahata all over Bengal and northern Orissa. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur started, he revived the same thing. And the headquarters was in the same place, Surabhi Kunj. It's a special part of the Mayapur Navadweep area where the Surabhi cow lives. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur really started pushing his Namahata movement and traveling all around Bengal and Orissa, establishing Namahatas. He'd go from village to village. Each village he'd have a program. Many people would come. And then the next day he'd say, okay, now you have a weekly program. And that was a Namahata established. So he went all over and established many hundreds of Namahatas. He called them Namahatas, marketplaces of the holy name. And most of them were just sort of, you know, they didn't have like a temple or something, they just had their programs in someone's house or outside or whatever. But some of them, there were a few who built centers. And when our devotees, ISKCON devotees, were moving around Bengal some years ago and establishing Namahata, going from village to village, same program, then there were at least one or two cases they went to some village and spoke to the people, you know, we want to have a Krishna conscious program tonight. And the local people said, right, yeah, we're all Hare Krishna devotees. We have a center here. It's been here for years. Come, we'll have the program in our center. So the devotees then went for the program in the evening in that center, and on the altar there was a picture of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the people said, yes, this is the person. He established this program and he established this center. So some of those Namahata programs were still going on. This is like probably in the 1990s, you know, 100 years later, something like that. Some of those programs were still going on. So we called them Namahatas, and Hatha means marketplace. In other words, the idea is we're trying to distribute something. They're not just insular little programs. We just gather, the devotees gather and have their own programs, then they go home. No, the whole mood was, let's spread. Let's spread Krishna consciousness. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he talked about, he established a whole system of, like, positions, posts that different people could occupy in the Namahata structure. There were the Namahata leaders. They would make policy decisions. There were the market reporters. They would take the figures, how many people attended, how many new people, how many books distributed, all this information. They would gather that information and send it to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They were the market reporters. There were the... Well, he established a system for distributing, because it's Namahata, the marketplace of the holy name. They're distributing the holy names. He established a system of distributing the holy names to whatever degree the recipient was qualified to receive the holy name, in terms of how much faith they had. So there was calculation done on the currency was Shraddha, faith. If someone had 1 cent worth of Shraddha, they would get the holy name on the level of Shraddha. If someone had 5 cents worth of faith, they would get the holy name on the level of Nishtha. If someone had 20 cents worth of faith, they would get the holy name on the level of Ruchi. If they had 25 cents worth of faith, they get the holy name on the level of Asakti. If they had a silver dollar of faith, they would get the holy name on the level of Bhava. And if they had a solid gold coin of faith, they would get the holy name on the level of Krishna Prema. So there was, in the Namahata structure, the scale operator for weighing, calculating how much faith. Then there was there were the laborers. They would deliver the holy name once it was ascertained how much faith the person could pay. They would then deliver the holy name. There were watchmen, security men, to see if anyone would try to steal the holy name and stop them. There was, every Namahata had a bookkeeper keeping track of all the transactions. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself was the cleaner. He was the cleaner, making sure that the marketplace itself was kept pure and it didn't become like a material sort of business, something like that. Yeah. So there were traveling salesmen, there were wholesalers, of the holy names. The wholesalers, they're sort of like regional secretaries. Very amazing. So like this, he spread Krishna consciousness all over Bengal and northern Orissa in the form of the Namahata movement. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he predicted that soon there'll be a person who will take the chanting of the holy names all over the world. And by his influence, devotees from Russia, America, France, England, by his influence, they'll all gather in Mayapur for Gaupalila and together chant Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan. And of course we understand that person was Srila Prabhupada. It was definitely Srila Prabhupada. He took that message all over the world and induced so many thousands and ultimately millions of people to chant and become involved in Krishna consciousness. In 1900, Bhaktivinoda Thakur moved back to Puri. He took Babaji, a type of Babaji initiation from Gaukishore Das Babaji Maharaj in 1908, and then passed away in 1914 in Jagannath Puri. Hare Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Aki. And he wrote one verse about Haridas Thakur, whose samadhi is there. He passed away in Jagannath Puri. He wrote a famous verse. He reasons ill who thinks that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. The Vaishnava dies to live, and while living, tries to spread the holy names around. It's a very beautiful verse. It is there at the Samadhi of Haridas Thakur, but it's written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So these are some things about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Of course, there's so many things we could say, but this is just a little some details, simple details on the pastimes of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki
Jai.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki
Jai.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Gaur Premanande. So, what's our program?